On the air, online, from New York City, border to border, and coast to coast, you're connected with Tom Sullivan.
Yes, you are. Thank you for coming by. Welcome to the Big Radio Show. Happy Monday to you on this 14th day of September 2020. 2 weeks and 1 day away from the first presidential debate, which I think is going to make or break one of these candidates. I mean, I know a lot of you are, you're going to vote for your person no matter what. But there's 10 to 15% that are saying and decided. So that will be 2 weeks from one day. 2 weeks from tomorrow. By the way, we just got word from the National Weather Service that Hurricane Sally is now a Category 2 hurricane with winds of 100 miles per hour. So that's heading for right about where Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana all come together down there in the Gulf. So everybody, Biloxi, Mobile, New Orleans, all that, they're waiting. They're saying it's not so much the wind, it's so much the water. They're worried that it will come on shore and just stop and just unload the rain on them. So plus the storm surge. So it's, you know, prayers for the people in that part on the Gulf Coast tonight. Yeah, it goes up even Florida Panhandle over towards Pensacola, and or Panama City, I should say, that area. All right. I want to get you up to date on the virus, and I want to give you the very latest on this. What we're all finding out is that the medical people they're learning about this virus. They have gotten things wrong. And so you can say that's, you'd be critical of them or not, but I've got a bunch of different, Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner, has a lot of good things to say. 855-295-6600. Before we get into that, let's get Michelle in here from Lady Lake, Florida. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, the reason I'm calling is because of this whole coronavirus, and, you know, I realize that it's a serious matter, especially for the elderly and the immunocompromised. I'm in that category. But I'll tell you what, it's been so politicized that I've really lost faith in trusting those numbers because, for instance, I know of six people who had gone to get the test, and they stood in line, and in one case, there was four of them where they had ran out of tests. I guess it was towards the end of the day. So they had ran out of tests, so those guys had already registered, but they went home without taking the test. And then the other two, they got sick of waiting in line, and they left. Well, all six of them got positive test results, but they hadn't taken the test.
But they did not take the test. Yeah.
But they did not. And I was listening to Armstrong and Getty, and they said the same thing had happened in California. They were reporting on that. So
no, I've had calls. I've had calls from people supporting your theory that they. I've had. I forget where they came from, but they're from all over the country. I think out of all the, when we look back on this, I think the testing has been a disaster from day one. And I don't get this phoning up the records to say that this person is positive when they did not even take the test. So that's wrong. Somebody's playing games.
Yeah, well, and then the ones that are just flat wrong, like that NFL team, the NFL teams that got 77 positive test results, and come to find out this lab in New Jersey just screwed up, and they. But
right.
But how many people do they not catch? And the thing, too, is if you follow the money, the hospitals make a lot of money. There's a lot of money to be made off of this COVID. And so there's some strong motivation. And so I don't know. I don't trust it. And I want my freedom back. I don't want to have to go around wearing a mask. And I'm
willing
to take that
risk. Let me ask you. What are your thoughts then about the vaccine? Are you saying the same about that, where you don't trust it if it comes?
You know, the vaccine, I don't know. I jury's out on the vaccine. Any new vaccine that comes out, I'm not a big vaccine person. I mean, I like the idea of being able to have it available, and I do take my flu shot every year, and I've had the pneumonia shot. So it just kind of depends, but I'm really, because of hydroxychloroquine, and I know that's a very unpopular thing to say, but I've seen enough reporting on it, I believe that there's really great therapeutics. So if you have the misfortune of catching it, then there are ways to treat you and your likelihood, unless you're really elderly and very compromised, you're probably going to get through this. And a lot of times you don't even know you've had it.
Well, the problem became President Trump came out and started talking about hydroxychloroquine. Now, that immediately puts people on the opposite side from each other. They'll put a fence in between them. And there are people going, oh, hydroxychloroquine, that's the solution. Because I'm a Trump fan. And then the people who don't like Donald Trump, no, it's a hoax, it's fake, doesn't work. I think there is something to it. But the FDA came out. Remember, they gave the emergency use authorization, and then they pulled it. And I don't understand what's going on at the FDA. They seem like they're waving in the wind, depending upon whether the politician is on their side or not. I think there is something beneficial to hydroxychloroquine. I think there's other therapeutics that are also beneficial. A lot of doctors talking about other things, but they don't want to give a blanket, this is the solution. So they hold back. But I think when push comes to shove, if you're sitting there in a hospital and you're sicker than a dog and you've got the coronavirus, it really comes down to you and your doctor and what your doctor thinks and what you think. I think that's really what it comes down to. I don't care about the FDA at that point.
Right. Try. You should have the right to try whatever's available at that point. And the final thought is back to the masks. So, first of all, we heard, don't wear masks. Do not wear masks. They're not effective.
Right.
In fact, you're putting yourself at greater risk wearing a mask. Then we heard, oh, God, you got to wear a mask. You got to wear a mask. Well, the same doctor that I saw reporting on not wearing a mask came back and she said, you know, even if you have these masks, it's not going to do you any good because it won't stop the virus. You have to wear this special mask. It was beyond an N95 even. And she says, otherwise, it's not going to protect you. So it's a waste. But then, politically, it comes back around. She goes, no, you got to wear your mask. So I'm not buying it.
Well, they switched the reason. Mm-hmm. The N95 is supposed to stop the virus from entering into your mouth, your respiratory area, and yet the reason for the mask, they said, well, the reason is because when you breathe out and your aerosolized virus goes out of your mouth, which you can't see because it's, you know, microscopic, it will fall on the floor and won't reach the other people that are around you. So, okay, I don't know. If you want me to wear a mask, I'll fine, I'm good with it. But I'm not sure that the reason switched halfway. And then there was the whole reason about, well, we didn't want you to wear a mask because we needed them for healthcare workers. So I don't disagree with you at all on your skepticism. I'm a skeptical person in the first place, Michelle, but I'll play along. I wear a mask only because if it does help, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't hurt me. That's my theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that they're testing our willingness to comply. And I'm really, the N95 mask, that would be great because I really do think that that makes a difference. And when this thing first hit, I was lucky enough to have a couple of them because we had done some painting a while back. So we had them on hand. However, these little flimsy blue masks that everybody's wearing, I don't think that they're making any difference. So anyway,
I don't know. All right. I don't blame you for being skeptical and being cautious. So I think that kind of the best of both worlds. Michelle, thank you. I appreciate the call. The vaccine, Story out today about a vaccine, maybe only 50% effective. Is that good enough? Well, like the flu vaccine is not 100%, not even close. So Fauci was talking to somebody, said it's not a magic bullet. He says, we don't know yet what the efficacy might be. We don't know if it will be 50% or 60%. He was talking to a group at Brown University. He said, I'd like it to be 75% or more, but acknowledge that may not be realistic. So the FDA said once a vaccine is shown to be safe and at least 50% effective, it can be approved for use here in the U.S. So a scientist by the name of L.J. Tan, he's the chief strategist for Immunization Action Coalition. He says, when we talk vaccine effectiveness, what we're talking about is how effective was the vaccine in preventing actual disease. And he says, if you vaccinate 100 people, 50 will not get the disease. It may not sound very impressive, but he says it's possible that the vaccine will reduce the severity of the disease. So if you part of the 50% that it doesn't work on and you get the virus, maybe it won't be all that bad. So that's where they're talking now about. Northwestern University guy said it's true 50 out of 100 people who get the vaccine could still end up getting infected. Hopefully the majority will have a milder disease. So now they're even couching the bet on all this. So the guy from Northwestern says herd immunity is seen when we have somewhere between 60 to 70% of the population having some degree of protection. So he says, here's the math. If 20% of the population ends up getting exposed to the virus and developing an infection before we get a vaccine, then we would still need an additional 40% to gain protection via a vaccine. If you've got 40% of the population immune through a vaccination and you have 50% efficacy, he said, then you're going to have to vaccinate 80% of the population. So it's not going to happen right away. 855-295-6600. We will be right back.
The real world and you meet here. You're listening to Tom Sullivan.
Okay, the other guessing game out of all of this is, when's that vaccine going to be here? And I heard today, we'll play it for you, CEO of Pfizer is talking about much sooner than anybody else is talking about. But I prefer to trust Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner. This is his realistic timeline.
This clinical trial is an event-based trial, meaning that they have to wait until enough people in the clinical trial actually develop COVID disease to get a readout from the trial on whether or not the vaccine is actually preventing people from getting signs and symptoms of COVID. The initial market entry of this vaccine, if you will, is not going to be like a traditional approval of a vaccine, where it's sort of a binary event and the vaccine gets licensed for a broad community. What it's likely to be is offered under an emergency use authorization to a very narrow population initially, perhaps frontline healthcare workers and first responders, maybe people above a certain age who are more likely to have a bad outcome from COVID. And then after the FDA gets more experience with the vaccine and after the original data set from these clinical trials continues to mature, then the FDA is going to slowly walk down that approval, meaning let it be available to successfully larger groups of people while they collect very rigorous evidence in the post-market. So this is likely to be a very staged market entry. I think that's what people should expect. But for most people, they will not have access to a vaccine until 2021. I think maybe the first quarter of 2021, probably the first half of 2021. And that's assuming that these vaccines are demonstrated to be safe and effective in these large trials. I think the people who will get it this year are going to be people, select populations, who are either at high risk of contracting the virus and perhaps spreading it, or at high risk of having a bad outcome to it.
Yeah. Look it. Whatever the government says, just double it. It's not going to be here as fast as you think. Maybe it would be great if it was. But I that's why I like Gottlieb. He seems to be a pretty straight shooter. And he went on to talk about that this vaccine will not be used in the traditional sense.
I think that's right. I think we're going to be using this vaccine, at least initially, almost in the therapeutic sense. We're not going to use it like we use a traditional vaccine where you broadly vaccinate a population to try to prevent a virus from spreading across the population. What we're going to be doing is targeting the vaccine to select groups of people who are at very high risk of a bad outcome from COVID to try to reduce their risk. But it's not going to be used to achieve broad-based immunity, at least in 2020. Perhaps in 2021. And I think it's likely that if the FDA is able to get top-line data from the trial that Dr. Borla was talking about at the end of October, it's going to take them a number of weeks to even turn around an initial authorization. They're going to want to bring that before an advisory committee. They're going to want to scrub that data set very hard. So this isn't something you can just turn around in a couple of days. So, you know, I think hopefully we'll see some availability in 2020. I'm optimistic that we will if these trials are successful, but it'll be very limited availability.
Yeah. So, okay. So, Dr. Jeanette Nishawat, doctor here in New York, has this response to what Dr. Gottlieb was just talking about.
Well, for starters, because they can only make so much in one time. So I think it's appropriate to target those who are at high risk. Who passed away? Who are the high-risk populations? It's Hispanics, Latinos, African-Americans, nursing home residents, those with underlying health conditions. So they should be priority until they are able to produce and manufacture more vaccines. Remember, it's not just a matter of having a vaccine that works. A major process and a major issue is manufacturing and distribution of the vaccine. So there are more than one pharmaceutical companies, obviously, on the market making the vaccines. We've got Pfizer, we have Moderna, we have Novavax, we have AstraZeneca. So this is just them saying, let's prioritize who needs it first. Yeah. And it's very reassuring. Just around the corner, in less than 6 weeks, the data is going to come out to show, is it safe? Is it effective? Will it protect those who are at highest risk? I think that's appropriate for them to put those who are most vulnerable first.
Yeah, but did you see where AstraZeneca, who paused their trial because of somebody that got myelitis, which is numbing of the nerves around your spinal cord, numbs your nerves in your legs and arms, could even be shooting pain at the same time. I mean, it's pretty serious. And they somehow have said, oh, we're going to resume our trials. Maybe they figured out that whoever got the myelitis is getting got it some other way, that it's not related to the vaccine. Here's Pfizer's CEO saying, oh, yeah, we're going to have this thing ready very soon.
We started already manufacturing, and we have already manufactured hundreds of thousands of doses. So just in case we have a good study readout, conclusive, and FDA plus the advisory committee feels comfortable, but we will be ready.
Talking about by the end of next month, by the end of October. They should know, but that doesn't mean it's going to be approved to be sent out to your local doctor.
From New York City to the world, Tom Sullivan.
Hello, world. So, Michelle started the hour off about her skepticism about all of this, about testing and the COVID numbers and all this. And I can't, I mean, I know we live in a time where people have more conspiracies. Oh, I forgot to tell you, Alex. The other day, I got an email from one of our regular posters on Twitter who is really into all the conspiracy theories. I mean, he's really, really into them. And he sent me an email the other day, and he said, I'll tell you what, they're blocking my emails now, my conservative emails, they're blocking them. And I thought, what is he talking about? He says, yeah. He says, they're putting a lot of my conservative emails into my spam folder. They're calling them spam. I'm laughing because I'm thinking, because he buys into all the, he must subscribe to, you know, Billy Bob's blog that is full of all kinds of made up conspiracies. And then you got the whole China and Russia, and they're dropping all these things into these blogs and everything else. And he subscribes to all that stuff. And so his email provider, I don't know who it is, his email provider is going, no, this is spam. And he doesn't understand that it really is. It's made up, but he believes that they're blocking his conservative emails.
I want to be clear. I'm not going nuts.
Yes, you are. Yes. Yes. So there's a lot of people who buy hook, line, and sinker into conspiracy blogs. And so you take that, it puts a lot of conspiracy stuff out there for people to go, I don't know about this vaccine. I don't know about this coronavirus. I'm telling you, and I think there is a lot of mistrust, and I think a lot of it is earned mistrust. I think the FDA and the CDC and the White House and you name it, they've all come up with crazy stuff. And then they change their mind and or just don't follow their own guidance. And a lot of states opened up violating the CDC guidelines, and they had to shut back down again. So they're being super cautious about opening up again because they don't want to have another shutdown. So back to Dr. Gottlieb, he talks about, yeah, there's a lot of people out there in America that will doubt this vaccine.
I think perhaps some of it goes away after election day. There's a lot of anticipation around the election as an artificial deadline for vaccine news. And I think that deadline is going to come and go. I don't think we're going to see an authorization before the election. So hopefully everyone just takes a deep breath after the election. You know, look, I think that these things have been talked about in a political context, and that's atypical for the approval process for any product. It's not extraordinary. We've seen it before, but it's atypical. And especially with a vaccine that people want to be confident in, you want to try to keep the politics and the science separate.
You do, and this was pretty interesting because Dr. Gottlieb, again, he was the head of the FDA. He's very much involved in all these kinds of institutions that deal with approving these sorts of things and on the board of some of the big pharma companies and all that. And he came out on Face the Nation yesterday and said, you know, people are criticizing the White House, but it really, he blames a lot of the early confusion once the virus was recognized in this country on the medical community and probably some of the doctors that you and I talk about on a regular basis. Here's Dr. Gottlieb.
Well, look, the public messaging wasn't clear and consistent in the outset and could have been better at all levels of government. I think if you look back in February, and I think when history looks back, the biggest failing over that month was that we were situationally blind. We had no idea where this virus was and wasn't spreading. And so when it came time to have to shut down cities, rather than focus on the cities that were truly epidemic, like New York City, we went for a simultaneous shutdown order across the whole country, when that was unnecessary now in retrospect, because there were a lot of cities where the virus wasn't spreading at that time, and we could have focused our mitigation. But we had no diagnostic tests in the field to screen people. And what CDC officials were relying on and telling the coronavirus task force was that there was no spread of coronavirus in the United States in February. They were telling them that. because they were looking at what we call the influenza-like illness surveillance network, basically a surveillance network of who's presenting to hospitals with flu-like symptoms. And they said that they're seeing no spike in people presenting with respiratory symptoms, therefore coronavirus must not be spreading. And they were adamant about that. I was talking to White House officials over this time period. They were adamant about that. And I suspect the president was being told as well that this virus wasn't spreading in the United States. And that may have impacted what he did and didn't say and his willingness to, you know, as he said, talk it down a little bit, because he was of the perception that this was not spreading here in the United States. That really was the tragic mistake. Not just that we didn't have the information, but we were so confident in drawing conclusions off of what proved to be faulty information and incomplete information.
Are you saying he was failed by health officials? Are you letting him off the hook?
Look, I think in this respect, the White House leadership was failed by health officials. We did not have a diagnostic in the field. So we couldn't screen for it. We should have. We should have started working on that in January. And we over-relied on a surveillance system that was built for flu and not for coronavirus without recognizing that it wasn't going to be as sensitive at detecting coronavirus spread as it was for flu, because the two viruses spread very differently. Those were two critical failings. Now, you could say, well, the president put those people in place. He's responsible. You know, you can make second-order arguments around that. But I think ultimately the White House did not have the information they need to make decisions. The key function of agencies in the government is to provide policymakers with accurate, actionable information. The White House didn't have it. And I had a lot of conversations with the White House over this time period because I was concerned it was spreading here, and I was pushing them on that, and they were telling me over and over that they were hearing from top officials from the agencies that they were pretty confident that it wasn't spreading here. I think when history looks back, that's going to be a key moment. That's what was going on over February.
Yeah, and he was responding, obviously, to the Woodward book and how Woodward said the president knew on February 7th that this thing was very deadly and played the tape, and we all heard it. And yet, so the president knew that this was serious, but they did not know, they did not have a clue if it was spreading. And that's what Dr. Gottlieb is saying, is that so when it came to the middle of March and the president shut down the economy, they shut down the whole country because they did not know where it was and where it wasn't. And meantime, his medical advisors are giving him false information. So, yeah, when you look back, it's going to be interesting to see. Dr. Thomas Friedman, Cut 17, former FDA guy. No, he was CDC guy. Said that the vaccine manufacturers also right now need to be more transparent.
Well, with the one exception of patient confidentiality, which should never be violated, we need a lot more transparency from the vaccine manufacturers. For a vaccine to be effective, for it to actually help stop the pandemic, it's got to not only work, it's got to be safe, it's got to be accessible, and it's got to be trusted. If any one of those things is in doubt, it's not going to be able to do the kind of good that we need to help get back toward a new normal.
I don't understand all along this whole HIPAA thing about, oh, patient confidentiality. You know what? If I got the coronavirus, why do I care if you know that? It's not like I've got some sexually transmitted disease. I've got the coronavirus. Okay, so I've got it. And you know that. What are you going to do? I don't understand what the confidentiality is over this whole thing. We can't protect each other when we don't know who has it and who doesn't. It's been a complaint of mine since this whole thing broke out in February. Phone number is 855-295-6600. We will be right back.
Keep doing what you're doing, Tom. I'm glad you brought this topic up.
Oh, Tom, you are so wise. Oh, my gosh.
So we're still vaccine, they think maybe will be 50% effective. So again, folks, this is something that this COVID virus, we're going to have to deal with it in the neighborhood. It's not going away anytime soon. 855-295-6600. Dr. Don in Reno. Hi, doctor.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Oh, hi.
I'm listening.
I just wanted to say that I really love your show.
Thank you.
I actually listen to it every day, and I'm a Democrat, so.
Oh, I actually how about really that?
You're
thank you.
Balanced. Yeah.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say something about the whole mask issue. It really is something that transcends politics. I would just advise everyone to forget what the government has told you that you must do. I would say just let it be your choice, because research shows that wearing a mask could prevent you from infecting like your neighbor, your best friend, your elderly parents, a frontline worker who's diligently stocking groceries nightly to ensure that your children don't go hungry, you know? And if you could even save one person, just one person, say you encounter 1,000 people in 6 months, if you could just save one of those people, then what would be your choice?
Well, we don't know.
That's sort of
well, we don't know. We don't get a badge for that because we don't know. I just
I think
it's at first at people. I think it sounds a little gross, but I know most of us. I will admit it. You get excited, and you're talking fast, and everything else, and all of a sudden, a little spit comes out. Oh, oops.
Yeah.
But what we don't realize is not when we're all excited and talking fast or shouting or anything else, is that there are aerosols coming out of our mouth all the time. Right now, while I'm talking to you,
exactly.
There they go. There's a bunch of them. And we don't see them because
exactly.
They're microscopic.
You lose both
and
that water vapor actually through your mouth. So
we're throwing those out there. So if we can... If they bounce off a mask and fall to the floor, that sounds like maybe I'm going to protect you if you're a few feet away from me and I'm talking to you. But I guess people think they don't have to wear a mask because they don't see, you know, Doubting Thomas. They don't see the little microscopic aerosols coming out of their mouth. I mean, we know it when we cough. We know it when we sneeze. But just talking, just breathing. You exhale little
exactly.
microscopic viruses.
Exactly. And unfortunately, it's just gotten too politicized. And I guess there's no way of actually physically showing people unless you were to, I don't know, dye their spit a certain color and maybe get them to breathe and talk to one another in some sort of experiment, but it's literally just to protect. If we all do it, then we're all sort of protecting one another. I know that there are some people with specific health conditions that they cannot actually wear masks, but think about it as also protecting them because they cannot actually.
Gotta be very few people. I remember months ago there was a video that some research group had put out, and it showed this guy standing in a grocery store, and it was simulated about when he talked how his breath and his aerosols came out of his mouth at the grocery store, and not only was a little cloud around him in the aisle, but also over in the next aisle. And this guy sent me a tweet back, because I've sent it out on my Twitter feed. Guy sent me a tweet back and said, "That's crazy. That doesn't happen. Why, this is the kind of misinformation that people should not be seeing." And I'm thinking, now, pretty much is the way it happened. They really had a good example. It was simulated of how far our little aerosols come out of our mouth. Just breathing. Fascinating.
Oh, exactly. And then once you mix in singing, yelling, talking fast and excited, you know, and most people don't naturally stand, you know, 6 feet away from one another. we normally get closer to each other if we're going to have a conversation. Because, you know, we want to, like, take on social cues and all of that. So, anyway.
Whatever happened, doctor, whatever happened to the virus on handles and hand railings and packages and all that? That was the big scary thing in the beginning. Was don't touch this, don't touch that, wash your hands.
Well, because it combines to receptors on cells in your lungs. What I'm believing anyway is that most probably it's just not as infectious. I mean, you need to wash your hands, obviously, but it's most probably dose. It probably is dose dependent, and so that means, you know, you're not going to get enough into your body in order to bind to the particular, I believe it's ABP2, I think that is actually the little protein that
you're way over my head. You're way over my head. But in other words, if the little virus is sitting on a package for a couple of hours, it's losing its potency or something to that effect. Anyway, I got to run, but doctor, thank you. Appreciate the call. Yeah, we're going to debate this for a while, I think. But we don't have to debate the full comment line ban working today. Nice way to start off a Monday. The stock market up 327 points on the Dow to 27,993. The S&P up 42. The NASDAQ all over the map lately. Today it was up 203. The price of gold up $17 to $19.65. The price of oil basically unchanged at $37. Still very low for a barrel of oil. And that also is a precursor of what they're thinking about the economy down the road is not going to be much if you got low oil. On the comment line, this caller says the guidelines are ridiculous.
So let me get this straight, Tom. It's okay to fly commercial in a packed plane, no social distancing, but restaurants, churches, and Trump rallies that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get that either. I don't think it's... In a plane, I'm not flying because I think it is too close. This caller doesn't want to leave a message.
I didn't ask to leave a message. I was hoping to speak to the screener. I guess I'll call back. I wasn't calling to leave a message.
Oh. Well, what happens is if we don't pick up, it goes automatically.